Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Andre Caldwell, and I'm a shareholder in the Oklahoma City office. And here with me today is one of my favorite colleagues, Diana Narrow, who is the chair of our cross-border practice group.
Thank you, Andre. The feeling is mutual.
Well, look, I'm just happy to be here with you, and I'm excited about all the information that you're going to be able to share with our listeners. Of course, we are limited to 20 minutes, but I know we could talk about this forever whenever you and I get going. So
definitely.
Today's topic is identifying and fixing the top five remote workplace investigation mistakes. And as I mentioned, Diana is a chair of the cross-border practice group. Obviously, a large part of her practice deals with conducting remote workplace investigations. I myself am a member of our whistleblower and investigations practice group, and also deal primarily in conducting investigations. And so I think this will be a good topic. Diana, I'm going to flip it to you. Talk to us, based on some of your experience, what you have identified in the past as being a mistake and how you've worked to remedy that mistake.
Sure. I feel like I'm all mistakes all the time, so this should actually be pretty easy for me. Truly. You know, I think there's a host of them. And as you said, we could talk about this for hours. I think, you know, one thing to mention before we get into the mistakes is just even prior to COVID and life becoming a remote working situation, I saw and had to do a lot of investigations on a remote basis because I was conducting them in places that were in totally different locations and time zones. And Andre, as you know, you partnered with me on one in the Congo. So doing the cross-border space investigation type work sort of lends itself to a remote investigation context. And I think because of that, I've had more time to make mistakes than the average investigator. So I do have some good examples of where I've really gone astray and how I've tried to fix it and how I try to take those lessons and make them things I can learn from for future investigations. I think, and I don't know if this is like a personality type issue with me, it probably is, but I do think like the rigidity, the desire to have an investigation sort of look and feel a certain way, especially when you're used to doing them in person. You know, for years I did investigations in person when I was in-house. I was responsible for all workplace investigations, and we always did them in person. I never did them remotely. And in that context, you can control the room. You can sort of really feel and sense what people are thinking and where their heads are at. And it makes it just so much easier. And I think the biggest mistakes I've made is sort of expecting a remote investigation to look and feel the same way and really wanting it to, right? Really being rigid about like how I want this whole thing to play out. And I think when you're doing things on a remote basis, you have a total lack of control that for control freaks like me can be really difficult to deal with. And sort of the more you dig in on how you want it to look and feel, the worse it goes. And so I would say the biggest mistake I've made is sort of being too rigid in how I expect a remote and cross-border investigation to go and really wanting to have a prescribed format and having it look like that. And so I think the biggest lesson I've learned is to be flexible, right? So for example, I think because when I started doing remote investigations, I'd come from a space where I'd been doing them in person. I was used to seeing people. I automatically thought that the right way to do a remote investigation, sort of the next best way to do it, would be a video, right? Because like at least you can still see people. I mean, it seems very logical that that's the next best way to do it if you can't have people there in person. And I think that's not universally true. And in fact, with certain individuals and certain personalities and temperaments, it can really blow things up and have people feel really uncomfortable. They feel like they're sort of being interrogated with a bright spotlight on them. They feel like they're being videotaped and they're very careful about what they say. And I always sort of went into it with that assumption, well, if I can't have it in person, it's got to be in video. It's got to be done that way. And I just don't think that always works. I think that, you know, you and I have talked about this a ton, especially with people who are making complaints about workplace-related misconduct. Like, it's a very vulnerable position to be in. It's very hard to come forward and say, look, this happened to me. I mean, I see it all the time where people blame themselves and don't want to talk about it and feel uncomfortable, and shining that spotlight in the video context, I think, can often make it worse. And so I've had to let go a little bit of like what I think an investigation should look like, and sometimes be willing to just pick up the phone and call someone. And often you do have more, person has the ability to be vulnerable. You have the ability to really like think through your questions without there being sort of awkward moments where you're staring at someone on a video screen. That I will circle back to, you know, the original point, which is you have to sort of be willing to be more flexible and not assume a remote investigation is going to look and smell and taste like, you know, an in-person investigation, and be willing to be comfortable with that and sort of let go of the expectation that it's got to be done a certain way.
Well, I'll tell you this, if you've identified that as a problem, I can be a witness to the fact that you have remedied it, because as you mentioned, we worked the Congolese investigation and that was really a hybrid. I mean, we did some Teams interviews, we did some in-person interviews. I mean, there was a variety of mediums that we utilized to make sure it was an effective investigation. And I agree with you. I have forever preached video, but yeah. In practice, I have seen that there is some benefit to utilizing telephonic or other means. And so I 100% agree with that position. And clearly you fixed it. I can be a witness to that. For me, if I'm looking at mistakes that I have made in the past, potentially, one is not pushing back on clients who potentially want to do it on the cheap.
Yes.
And here's what I mean by that. Obviously, we want to be cost effective. We want to be cost efficient. And at times, the investigation may lend itself in that direction. And I speak specifically to being not only the interviewer, but also the scribe for the investigation, right? And you know, typically, I like to ask clients, listen, I want to bring an associate along, someone who might have a cheaper billable rate, if you will, to scribe. And they say, well, look, we don't want to spend that money.
Yep.
But there is such a significant benefit to having the ability to focus solely on asking the questions, solely on doing the interviews, while someone else can pick up on the responses, the little nervous ticks, the other things that really provide you a fuller picture of what's happening in the course of the interview as you gather the information, thereby allowing you to focus on what you are doing. I sometimes get caught up if I'm the interviewer and the scribe and doing too much. Like you said, you can get thrown off in your questions. And that even the added layer of that with a remote investigation, especially if you do it on video, because there's so many more distractions. You've got an app on your computer screen. You've got a person moving about on your computer screen. If you're at home, like me, you might have a kid run across the background. I mean, there's so many things that are going on that can prevent you from truly being able to focus on doing your portion of the job. And so I recommend, as we did in the Congolese investigation, having a scribe, allowing the interviewer the opportunity to focus on the interview. And I'll tell you, I preach this forever. Don't waste your time, talent, and resources on doing an effective investigation. Because if you do, the money you've spent is just going to be a waste. You're going to end up spending it later in litigation, litigating an issue that could have been potentially cleared up if an effective investigation had been done. So I'll circle back to the point there, just trying to do it on the cheap and not pushing back. And this is not a gouge the client for money or figure out how we can pad our pockets. It really does benefit the client in the investigation and you as the interviewer in recommending that there be a scribe and interviewer situation.
100%. Absolutely. I find that when I take notes while I'm interviewing people, I'm totally not listening, or I'm hearing, but I'm not listening, or I'm listening and I'm not hearing. I'm not sure what the right analogy is there, but I can't process both. And just to go back to the rigidity point, I apologize. Like, this is remote work and you have to be willing to roll with it. But yes, I completely agree. There is definitely, look, you have to be cost effective and cost efficient for sure. And there's ways to be nimble about that, but that's not a good use of savings at all, for sure. I totally agree. You know, I think probably the next one I think of, and it's sort of two separate issues, but very similar, is a failure to appreciate the company culture. And for, in my case, when I'm doing cross-border investigations, the country culture, right? Because those hugely play into things. And I think it's really hard in the remote context it's even harder, right, to intuit what a company culture is like and how that behavior, you know, that you're investigating may play into the culture. So I think sort of doing your diligence beforehand and talking to the folks that are in-house that you'll be working with. So whoever it is, if it's in-house counsel or HR, whoever you're helping, and really trying to suss out what the culture is like so that when you go ahead and interview people, you'll be able to read things that you might lose in the remote or video or telephone, however you're doing it, space. And then country culture as well, right? I mean, we learned that in the Congo for sure. And I'd done an investigation for a similar client the year before that was Nigeria-based. And I do tend to have a myopic view of the world, I think. And you really have to sort of let go of that to really hear what people are telling you, because it's all influenced, it's all colored by their culture, right? And it's totally different from what we're used to dealing with in the US. So for example, I know when we were doing the Congo investigation, you know, like people were freaked out, right? They were terrified to talk to us. And it wasn't just the company culture, it was also the country culture. I know the year before when I'd done the Nigeria investigation, it was very similar. And it was people growing up in very difficult circumstances, you know, that we have the luxury in the US of not having had. It really did sort of color how they responded to us. And I think I didn't have a great appreciation for that. It was harder to have a good appreciation of that to not be sitting in the same room with them. You know what I mean? I think it's even harder to read that type of thing. So yeah, that would be my second one for sure.
Well, and I'll tell you, you're right. The company culture and the country culture, especially combined in the one we did together, was eye-opening. I'm so impressed by your group and their ability to handle all these different issues dealing with international operations, because you don't really get into those types of issues when you're doing a state-based investigation. I mean, there's obviously company culture issues, but there may not be country culture
right.
issues. We are a part of that country. But you're right, that adds such another critical dynamic to the investigation that if you fail to properly assess it, you will fail to do an effective investigation.
So, I think that's right. Although, as you're saying that, and this is me just sort of thinking out loud, like, I mean, I think you could have the same issue with culture. You know, every part of the country is different, right? I mean, in some ways we do feel like we're in different countries depending on where we are. So I think understanding that as well. And I think, again, just putting it back in the remote space, you have to listen a whole lot more, I think, than you would otherwise, although you always should listen very carefully and just make sure you're really listening and really hearing to pick up on that type of thing, because it's harder to sense in the remote space.
So I'd say the next one that I would identify as a mistake, and again, I'm sure anyone who's heard my prior podcast has heard me say this, if you fail to plan, then you should plan to fail.
Yeah.
Failing to properly plan, especially in the remote investigation context, can be detrimental to the investigation. And that can take a myriad of avenues in terms of where you can potentially improperly plan. But I'll focus first on the technological aspect, right? So let's say you are doing them by video, which is one of the things that I am a big proponent of. I can tell you there are a number of times I've had Wi-Fi issues.
Mm-hmm.
I've had issues where my screen may be too small to really truly see the witness. I've had issues where we haven't been able to secure a remote location or a confidential location for the witnesses to be able to provide their interviews in. Remember when we were doing the Congolese investigation, I recall one witness who was actually in their car, a sort of freaked out situation. And so I think that there needs to be some real critical planning on the front end of how you conduct this workplace investigation, about making sure that there are proper connections to do so, making sure that if you're going to go the video route, you have a backup, you have a telephone number that if something gets disconnected, then you can call them and continue the investigation. It helps to be able to do it in one fell swoop, but as we saw in the Congolese investigation, because of internet connections and poor signal in rural areas, we had to start an investigation, get to a critical point, get disconnected, start the investigation or the interview back up the following day, and then you've sort of lost that momentum. So I think it's extremely helpful to plan for things of that nature in the context of doing your investigation. And then also, again, back on the technological aspects of it, I think it's important for you as the interviewer to also host or master the technology that you're using. case in point, you know, we've talked about Zoom as different platforms for conducting investigations. And, you know, if you're scheduling times that might overlap for your witnesses being interviewed and you don't control the technology, you might have a subsequent witness jump into your interview, which then already creates a more freaked out situation for the person being interviewed. It destroys the potential for confidentiality. It allows the witness to lose trust in you because they think, wow, you know, who are they going to go talk to next? Now someone knows I'm participating. They may have overheard certain things. Can I trust this person who I don't know, this outside lawyer? And there's just so many issues that, again, if you fail to plan, then you should plan to fail. We could talk on that topic forever.
Oh, I know. I know, 100%. And I also think it goes back into the, you know, the sort of prescribed rigidity format, right? Like country culture, it all ties in to sort of those issues, right? Where people were talking to us from the car because they felt that there was absolutely no safe space that they could go to speak to us. And like, had we really thought about that culturally before we did the investigation, I think we would have said, listen, we know people are going to be scared to talk to us. They're not going to feel comfortable. We could have worked with the client to sort of secure hotel rooms or places that people could go outside the office where they did feel safe and secure. That was definitely a lesson learned, because you're right, having conversations with people while they're driving in the car and then lose connection totally kills the flow. And I hadn't even thought about that, but you're absolutely right. You know, just another sort of knock against the necessity of doing video, right? The fact that people can call into videos and see someone on the line and have everybody feel like their confidentiality has been compromised is a huge detriment. And it can be devastating. It can be fatal to an investigation. And frankly, it can result in retaliation. And again, going back to country culture, like we in the US are pretty, you know, well-versed in anti-retaliation policies because it's part and parcel of our legal framework. But in other countries, when you tell, you know, folks who are participating in an investigation that the company won't tolerate retaliation, they're like, yeah, right. That's not true. And it's very hard to convince people. So if you then have a situation where you're like on a video and someone else is jumping in the video, you know, that adds to the fear that people will find out that they're participating and will be retaliated against. So yeah, I think that's a brilliant point. You know, I think the fifth one, you are way better at this than I am. So I will probably, you know, let you talk about it, but just controlling the technology, right? I mean, that is to the extent that you're using any sort of technology, which you will be it phone, be it, you know, video conference, be it Zoom. I think figuring out how it works beforehand, and you've alluded to this already, but figuring out how it works, you know, becoming very comfortable and facile in that medium before you get on the phone with any witnesses is critical. And I never think about that till I'm like, Andre, which button do I press? Which has happened. It's happened in real life. So,
well, it's funny you bring that up because it's not only mastery of the technology for the witness that you're going to interview, but it's also for your own team that you're going to have involved in the investigation. I mean, think about this. When we did the Congolese investigation, we had a host of people on our side that were critical to doing the interviews. We had an interpreter in France. We had a scribe. We had interviewers. I mean, it's just, there's so many different aspects to coordinating such a big effort. And the coordination of the effort is critical to making sure it's an effective investigation, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't get everyone on the same page, then what's the point? I mean, it looks like a sham. It feels like a sham. It is a sham.
Well, totally. And really thinking it through. Yeah, it's absolutely right. Really thinking it through, like sort of going back to the point that you made initially about not being the interviewer and the note taker. I mean, I guess being cost effective, but also really making sure that the investigation is done as well as possible. I mean, we saw this where we figured we'd have a note taker who spoke French because in the Congo, that's what everybody speaks, and the note taker. And then we'd have a translator. Maybe we need a translator, maybe we wouldn't, but if the note taker took French, then we'd be fine. And then it turned out that we weren't. And we absolutely needed a separate translator and a separate note taker. And it really had to be a note taker who was fluent in French and who could also listen very carefully, because French that's spoken in France is a different dialect than French that is spoken in the Congo. And I appreciate from a client's perspective, that can really add up. Like, you need 19 people on this particular interview. But in cases where you are doing it on a cross-border basis, you know, you definitely need to make sure that you have all your bases covered that way. And I think that's right. I mean, I think getting the team, every participant that you're ultimately going to have as part of your team in this particular investigation needs to be versed in how to use the technology. Because I know we spent quite a bit of time being like, can you call in? Are you joining? Are you not joining? And the person would write back and be like, I can't figure out how to do it. So I think huge planning sessions before you ever go onto a, you know, onto an interview with any witness is critical, just to make sure everybody is appreciating that, you know, how to use the medium.
Absolutely. The one beautiful thing about investigations, and especially about doing them with other people, is that there's always something to learn. I can't tell you, even here today, just listening to you on the podcast, the number of things I've learned from you in this interview, the number of things I've learned from watching you in our investigation in the Congo, and that just helps you get better at your craft. You know?
Definitely. I learn something new from you every day. So this is, I've learned a lot of things during this podcast and from doing investigations with you for sure. Absolutely.
Well, listen, I appreciate your time today. Thank you for your very helpful tips and comments. And, you know, if you find another investigation, give me a call so we can do it together.
Absolutely. You know, you're the first on my list. Thank you so much for including me today. I really appreciate it, Andre.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.